On the Wintrust Business Lunch, this is WGN Radio. John Williams here. And Scott Hamilton is too. Gallagher's Global Chairman of Human Resource and Compensation Consulting. What does all that mean, Scott? What do you do for a living?
Oh, little as possible most days, but really it just means that we're doing, I'm in charge of the people consulting services for Gallagher. So we do human resources, compensation, and a variety of human capital consulting for folks around the globe.
You've been following the jobs numbers, I suppose, huh?
Absolutely. And I'm not surprised. I'm not sure why so many others are. You know, what we're seeing out there is, you know, some continued strength in businesses around the United States. I know folks were expecting a much lower number and were kind of surprised. You know, maybe a little bit of the earthquake out east was from the jobs report. But at the end of the day, you know, we feel like, and what we're seeing with our clients is that, you know, the economy is doing okay. Folks are focusing on hiring, recruiting, and retaining workers in a variety of industries. One of the big areas in the jobs report that was highlighted was healthcare, and we do a lot of work in the healthcare space. And what we see hospitals and health systems doing to recruit and retain workers is absolutely what a lot of other industries ought to be doing, focusing on recruitment, retention, engagement, communications, getting comp right, things like that. So I'm thinking there's going to be continued, you know, strength in the job market through the rest of the year.
We have a big healthcare community downtown Chicago, and we're partners with the folks at Northwestern Medicine. And I have heard anecdotally, if nothing else, that that is a task, getting enough people to work in the healthcare industry. It would seem to me like if you're a nurse or a tech or a doctor, you ought to be able to find a job right now.
Everybody's looking for them, and I think, you know, what we're seeing our best-in-class healthcare employers focus on is they've got recruitment and retention right. They're creating a culture and a brand of healthcare that workers want to join, and they're really focusing on making sure that someone, a nurse, for example, or another clinician, feels like they can have a long-term career, feels valued, and feels like they're able to focus on what they're in healthcare in the first place for, which is caring for people and patients. So, you know, I think Northwestern and others are doing a lot to try and focus on growing their ability to recruit and retain clinicians like everybody else.
So in an era when good news is sometimes bad news and bad is sometimes good news, is the energy in the economy and this jobs report good news or bad news? Is there a downside to all this?
I don't think there's a downside. I think this just continues to reflect what a lot of the bigger picture numbers are showing. I mean, the Fed is reporting that GDP is growing at over 3%. And so, you know, the economy seems to be expanding. And it just seems like as businesses continue to focus on growth and revenue, they're looking to hire and add new jobs. Not every industry. I think, you know, you can look at look under the hood of the jobs report, and there's some industries that are not growing as fast as others. There are some that are shrinking, not hiring what they did last year. But, you know, overall, it seems like what's going on as measured by the jobs report is good news.
I wonder how the Fed will react to this.
I don't think they're going to be cutting rates anytime soon. It seems like there's a lot of pressure to reduce rates. But I think, you know, while companies and employers are adding jobs at this level, I don't know that inflation is going to drop to a level where they're comfortable saying, you know what, we can add more gasoline to the fire again.
Scott Hamilton is joining us, Gallagher's Global Chairman of Human Resource and Compensation Consulting. Talk a little bit more about some of the other numbers that you are following right now, Scott.
Oh, there's a lot of numbers that we look at. I'll tell you, you know, one of the things that we've done at Gallagher's, we've done a national survey of businesses across the country, variety of industries, and, you know, we're always asking what's important to them. And one of the things we're finding, and it's a little bit of a change from prior years, is that, you know, one of the number one priorities that seems to be rising up faster than others is folks are focusing back on growing their business, growing revenue and growing sales, which means they've got to do a strong job of attaching their people strategy and what they're doing for their employees back to the top line. So I think that's another indicator of why we're seeing the jobs report, you know, continuing to show the strength. Businesses are focusing on their people. They're doing a better job of recruiting, retaining, as I said earlier. But I really think the idea of what's underneath that is some numbers that we're going to stay focused on. When we do engagement surveys for our clients, one of the things we are finding as well is that providing strong and optimized benefit plans is a top five indicator of the ability to retain employees. So you can't grow your business without retaining your existing workforce. And I think that's where a lot of businesses are doubling down, looking hard at employee engagement and employee retention as a way to make sure they've got the horsepower and the people to keep doing what they're doing, as well as reach into growth opportunities.
Do you have any insight into business travel? Is that swinging up? Where is that these days?
Well, other than having done a few million miles of it myself, John, I think the airports continue to be very busy from a business travel perspective. I know the planes I've been on have been full. Don't know whether it's a better mix or bigger mix of leisure versus business, but you know, it seems to me, just from my own personal observations, that business travel continues to be strong. And I think we're seeing that in the leisure and hospitality numbers that showed up in the job report. It's interesting to see those numbers back at pre-pandemic levels, and I think that's one factor. Business travel is one factor that's adding to that.
Here's one number that you also promoted. Labor force participation rate remains basically unchanged. Labor force participation rate is 62.7%. What does that mean? What's that number?
Well, it's really talking about the percentage of the population that's considered to be employed, you know, employed at the level that they want to be employed. And so at the end of the day, you know, these are the workers that are willing to go and work for employers around the country. I'll be honest with you, I really don't know that those numbers are as accurate as they might be otherwise, because I do believe there are workers that are kind of missing from these surveys and missing from these numbers, which is why the unemployment numbers keep coming in looking like there's really low unemployment, but we keep adding jobs. We keep finding workers to add to these jobs, as the jobs report shows. So there's something a little amiss in the way the data collection is working in some of these reports. I do believe there's probably a higher participation rate than's being measured, as evidenced by the continued growth in the jobs numbers, John.
Yeah, well, but I mean, the unemployment, technically we advertise the unemployment rate is about 3%. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, you look nationally, and I think we were looking at the rate being around 3.8% nationally, and that's surveying households, which is different than what the BLS does in surveying businesses for numbers of workers and things like that. So there's, again, a little bit of noise in how the data is captured and presented, but, you know, it seems like unemployment at 3.8%, we're at full unemployment, yet we continue to find new workers adding it, to these jobs that are reported by the BLS in the jobs report. So I don't know what the real number is of unemployment, but it seems that there is a source of employees out there that we may need to look harder to find.
More and more jobs, more and more competition for jobs. You talked about compensation and that employers need to retain their employees. It would seem to me like that would drive inflation a little bit. Is that an accurate assessment?
I'm not sure if this is cart and horse and cart. You know, I think compensation more or less follows inflation. I think employers are paying, you know, their employees a market competitive wage. And a lot of factors go into the determination of a market competitive wage. We do surveys all around the country, variety of industries, trying to take a look at what other employers are paying. And at the end of the day, you know, what's competitive has to reflect what workers have to pay for housing and cars and gas and other things that are affected directly by inflation. So I know there is inflationary pressures in the cost of living, and I know employees always want to be paid more, but I think employers are doing a fair job of keeping up with raises and raise pools to try and better match what their employees need from a cost of living perspective. What they're budgeting from a merit pool perspective seems to be in that 3.5 to 4%, which seems to be in line with what we're seeing as inflationary numbers.
3.5 to 4%. You're talking about the average raise, the average increase?
Yeah, right. Raise pools across different industries. Yep, yep.
One other thing about all of that. So then what is important to employees, or what are employers being asked to do? Is it work from home? Is it retirement packages? Is it salary? Is it hours?
All the above, John. I think, you know, what many employers have come to grips with since the pandemic is understanding that workers' lives have changed and what workers' value has also changed. Workers are essentially bringing a much larger portion of their life and life needs to work every day. You know, when they were working at home, they had to deal with family things, and now they're back in the office, some are full-time. And at the end of the day, employers are trying to better match and optimize the compensation, the benefits, and the financial well-being of their workers with what the lifestyle needs are. So a lot of the work we're doing is that optimization, trying to balance and best match compensation, benefits, and retirement planning to what workers are asking for today. Employers that get it right are going to do a great job of recruiting and retaining workers going forward in this interesting and kind of topsy-turvy labor market.
That's Scott Hamilton, Gallagher's Global Chairman of Human Resource and Compensation Consulting. Scott, always interesting. Thanks for giving us some of your time today.
Appreciate it, John. Thanks for the opportunity.
Grace Fuller joins us, the General Manager at City Cruises Chicago. Hey, Grace, you're on WGN. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much.
So what boat am I going to go out on City Cruises to watch the eclipse?
The Sea Dog.
That's the long, yellow, fast, bouncy boat?
That's correct. I think it's one of your favorites.
I have done it before. So what's the deal then? Tell me how many boats you have, what the capacity is. Will you go out onto the lake? What's the deal?
We have one boat right now ready to go. The capacity is about 110. Presently, we do still have tickets available for this cruise, but we will be hosting the ultimate viewing party for Monday's eclipse. The cruise will board at 1:30. We'll cruise from 2 to 2:30 alongside Navy Pier on the lake for completely unobstructed views of this extraordinary event.
Right, because that boat does not have a roof, right?
Correct.
So you'll kind of go out onto the lake, and the buildings won't be in the way. Right now, where it looks like it's going to be pretty sunny, at 2:07, you go out at 1:30, and you say we come back at 2:30?
Right.
I presume you've got glasses for everybody?
We absolutely do.
Yeah, no kidding. How many of those boats do you guys operate?
We have actually 10 vessels on Navy Pier and one on the Chicago River. But we've got 5 Sea Dogs in total. We've got Sea Dog Extreme and then our other Sea Dogs as well.
What are those cruises like? Let's just forget the Eclipse Cruise for just a second. Just tell me a little bit about the business.
Absolutely. Thank you. For our Sea Dog cruises, we have lake and river architecture cruises that also offer a small portion of a thrill ride as well. And that's our standard cruises. And then we have our extreme cruises, which begin Memorial Day weekend. And those are on our Sea Dog fast boat, which is just, it's think of it as a roller coaster on the water.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. All of these cruises are absolutely fantastic for families as well. Kids and adults really do love the Sea Dog product. There's a little bit of something for everyone. We don't try to take ourselves too seriously on our cruises. We like to have a lot of fun. We like to get people in the water and give them a real thrill portion of the ride, too.
Sometimes you get a little splash, too. But I presume you're not going to be bouncing around for the eclipse, right?
No.
So we'll you'll cruise it. Out, watch it. And by the way, is it BYO?
It is.
So I can bring a cooler onto this trip?
You can. You can stop at one of the partners on Navy Pier as well and grab a beverage and bring it on our cruise, and you're good to go.
What's the charge for this now? If I sign up, I go to your website, what's it going to cost me?
$42.
$42 a person, BYO, and the website to go to if you want to. There are still seats available. To cityexperiences.com. Is that the best one, Grace?
That's the best one.
Okay. Cityexperiences.com. Grace Fuller, general manager at City Cruises Chicago. They run those boats all the time, and now a special reason to go out Monday afternoon. Thanks, Grace.
Thank you.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. We've got more business news. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Food and Wine Magazine is out with its Best Cities for Food and Drinks list, and Chicago ranks third in the country. The magazine says Chicago has a diverse offering of foods that satisfy appetites across budgets. New York City ranked number one, and New Orleans was second. Michelin-starred Kasama in Ukrainian Village is ranked as the fifth best in the country. It's the only Chicago restaurant in the magazine's top 20 restaurants list. More bad news on the office vacancy front in Chicago. The downtown office vacancy climbed to 25.1% at the end of March. According to data from real estate services firm CBRE, it's the first time the vacancy rate topped 25%. There's been a new record high for seven straight quarters. The rate was 13.8% when the COVID pandemic began. The pandemic led to the current remote work model. Fewer workers have also negatively impacted the downtown business district. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of Food Time. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. Happy Friday. Hit it.
Welcome back.
Yeah, welcome back to Jim Fizell, our gardening guru. Hi, Jim.
Hello, Steve.
Back for another year here on WGN. And Jim, how many years has it been?
Orion and I started in 1961, so that's got to be 63 years, something like that.
That's amazing.
And it's been fun. Gardening is something everybody can do. It's not fattening. It's not sinful. It's not illegal. So anybody can do it.
Well, we sure appreciate your advice on how to grow food and flowers and lawns and trees and all that. Although this week, the weather sure has not been cooperating with those of us who would like to get out there and plant.
No, it's too crummy out to go plant things outside, so we need to do it indoors where we can enjoy it. And there are a lot of things that can be seeded indoors right now to get them ready for planting outdoors about Memorial Day. Things like cosmos and marigolds and zinnias, and even some of the vegetables like pumpkins and tomatoes and peppers and eggplants can all be seeded at this time of year. You can make plants that are transplantable size in 4 to 5 weeks. And that's just when we need them. Incidentally, if you're going to grow any of these vine crops like eggplants or pumpkins, you need to be sure that you put those in peat pots because they do not transplant. You can't take them out of a pack or a plant and put them in the ground and expect them to grow. So actually, these things can be seeded indoors. It's best to do it under lights indoors. I've used a pair of two-tube fluorescent shop lights for many years. I would hesitate using LEDs. One of the things you get from using fluorescent tubes is a little bit of heat. You need to be able to lower or raise these fixtures so you can get them up and down, not just to be able to work under them, but because they need to be right down on the tops of the plants for them to grow very well. How to sow the seeds in these flats? First of all, you need to fill them with moistened seedling mix. It needs to be moist before you begin seeding, and that's the way it comes when it's in the bag. Once you get it into the flat or container, make depressions in the mix with the side of a label or a stick or something like that so you have rows across this container. Sow the seeds in the depressions. You're ready to go. In another 5 or 6 weeks, they're going to be ready to put out in the garden, and you're going to enjoy knowing that you did it yourself.
Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizell. On the food calendar, it's National Deep Dish Pizza Day and National Caramel Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
The annual Greek Heritage Parade is going to be Sunday, and Tia Angelos, Greektown Neighborhood Program Director, is going to talk to us a little bit about that. Fill us in, Tia. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, John. Thank you for having me today. We are so excited. Our fresh flags just went up and down Halsted Street this morning. And the parade kicks off Sunday, April 7th at 2:30 at the corner of Van Buren and Halsted, right in front of our iconic National Hellenic Museum. So attendees are invited to come to, you know, Greektown early, to come into our museum early, our restaurants early for brunch, lunch, and watch the parade. I mean, I'm excited.
This is
the first time we've had so many floats. I mean, there's going to be 37 floats, 15 marching groups in this. And so they'll be, you know, coming down Halsted all the way down to Madison. The podium of speakers is right in front of Greek Islands. So it's exciting for the whole area and the community.
You answered that question in part. I was going to ask, okay, so where is Greektown? Just give us the geography of that.
Yes, I will. So Halsted and Van Buren all the way down to Madison Street. So that is our Greektown neighborhood. And the museum, as I mentioned, National Hellenic Museum, is the starting off point. And the parade is brought to us by Enosis. And they're bringing this to us annually. And our Greek Independence Day is technically March 25th. And the parade this year, though, is April 7th. And it just, you know, it's so colorful to see all these dancers coming from area dance groups, the Greek churches in the suburbs and in Chicago. And, you know, the children are in their traditional gears. All these different organizations are wearing their Greek costumes. I'll be in my blue and white. So, I mean, you know, hundreds of people are on the sidewalks waving their flags, Greeks and non-Greeks. I mean, it's a big deal in the West Loop, too. They love seeing it.
Why all the interest in the parade this year?
Well, you know what? I think the last couple of years, everyone is getting out more and more, and it's something fun to do and be part of the cultural feeling and seeing all these different groups and dancers. It's amazing, the Greek music and the Greek food. I mean, yeah. My kids are like, where are we going to go before the parade and after the parade? I'm like, wait, it's one or the other. And it's like, no, we've got to hit Greek Islands. We have to hit Nine Muses for, you know, shish kebabs. And we've got to go to Mr. Greek Euros for a euro. So my kids are like, where are we eating first? So we're going to be here noon, even though the parade starts at 2:30. And we probably won't leave until 7 p.m. to hit everyone.
Yeah, well, you're answering my next question. So what are some of the marquee Greek restaurants and businesses in that area?
Well, Greek Islands, you know, the podium will be at Adams and Halsted, you know, right in front of Greek Islands. They open up at 11 o'clock. I was just in there getting some soup. And, you know, that is one of our restaurants that's been around for, you know, 62 years. Athena Restaurant is two doors down. So Athena Restaurant is so popular with the patio that opens up, but, really sunny with that patio rooftop opening. And then we've got Mr. Greek Euros. We've got Nine Muses. We have Spectrum Barn Grill that's really famous for their lamb chops, as Nine Muses is famous for their shish kebabs, too. So, I mean, I don't know where to start. It's so good everywhere, and I, you know, want to go to all of them.
When you think Greek food, you think lamb chops, you think chicken, you think cucumbers and tomatoes. Talk to me about Greek food a little bit.
Oh, yeah, the Mediterranean. Oh, yeah. Well, we all want to, you know, stand the good diet. So Mediterranean diet, that olive oil is so good for you. But also what I do want to mention, even though, you know, we're known for the Greek lamb and lamb chops, you know, and all our holidays, the traditional national dish for Greek Independence Day is called bakalao. And, for example, at Greek Islands, I was reading the menu. It's, to be technical, Icelandic cod, which is fried crispy. And it's just, you know, it's almost like a fish and chips. But instead of chips, we've got a side of this potato garlic dip. So it's a great combination to get bakalao with skordalia, which we, you know, call in Greek the garlic dip. And that is my favorite dish. That is the National Greek Independence Day dish, and that will be very popular this Sunday at Greek Islands and Athena Restaurant.
Well, that sounds a lot better than lutefisk, because that's where they take the cod, and they do terrible things to it, and then they eat it, and that's not a good thing.
Oh, no, this is one of my favorite dishes, the bakalao. That I'm waiting to have that at noon on Sunday, and then I'll probably be at Mr. Greek Euros at the end of the day to get a Euros. And probably 2-3 iced coffees. Our national iced coffee drink is the Strape, which is really famous at Nine Muses, right next to the museum. So if you're coming, you know, get your caffeine kick, get a Strape to go, walk up and down Halsted. We have 26 beautiful public art sculptures with butterflies on them that have been painted by Greek artists around Chicago, 11 Greek schools. So that's really popular, too. People come not just for the nightlife and the dining, but the cultural experience with our public art that's up and down Halsted, the National Hellenic Museum that has so many wonderful exhibits in it. And this is just a way to come into Greektown early before the 2:30 parade.
How big is the Greek community in Chicago?
You know what? There's over a dozen Greek churches. You know, I was down in the South Loop for 15 years, and I couldn't decide, do I want to go to St. Basil and Ashland and Roosevelt or St. George and Lincoln Park? The cathedral this Sunday, we'll be having a few of our grand marshals. We have the Archbishop of Americas coming from the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese in New York, Archbishop Elpidophoros, and our Metropolitan Nathaniel. So a lot of our Greeks will be coming from all the suburbs, the surrounding 20 churches, down to this cathedral in the Gold Coast, and then coming to the parade. So it's a pretty big deal that we've got Archbishop Elpidophoros coming from New York, flying in just for this parade. So there's going to be a special service in the Gold Coast at the cathedral on LaSalle. And, I mean, we've got St. Andrews on Sheridan. I can name every suburb has a Greek church. And we've got churches, you know, in Milwaukee and Indiana, St. Louis. They're all coming.
The annual Greek Heritage Parade in Greektown is going to be Sunday, April 7th, 2:30. One last thing. What's the prime viewing location? Where do I need to be?
The prime viewing, you know, the middle of Halsted. I mean, if you want to start out there, you know, towards the front at Van Buren, you can see everybody, you know, coming down because they're going to be all the way down South Halsted, you know, towards UIC lining up. But my favorite spot, you know, the middle and the end. I love the finishing with all the dancers and the Greek music. And, of course, the podium area to see all the speakers and these grand marshals that will be there. We've got a Greek-American leader in the community, George Revoliotis, that will be a grand marshal. We have the U.S. ambassador from Cyprus that is coming. They have their 50-year independence. I could go on and on, John. I'm going to be up and down the street. You'll see me in my blue and white.
Tia, you can't go any longer. The time is up here, but my goodness, you've done a good job selling it. I'm there, Tia. Well done.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you so much for having me.
Tia Angelos is the Greektown Neighborhood Program Director. Could you tell? GreekTownChicago.org is the website.